Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good morning to all out there listening to us here on Jazz 90.1. On the 20th of May to this edition of Soundbites, I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And we've got Nick taking a duly day off. I mean, a well-deserved day off.
Absolutely.
With all the work that he's been doing, he just finished up on a very successful presentation here about security and everything else. And decided to give the guy a day off. What the heck? But so the usual spiel that you hear about going on the news and everything else, you know, we're just...
I'm looking for that. I have that recorded somewhere.
You know, well, yeah. He does that every week completely off the top of his head. And I think that comes back to his
acting days.
Yes, his thespian training of being able to memorize things and be able to recite them at a moment's notice. And we sit here and are in awe every time he manages to rattle that off. And
yeah,
when
and
he's not
such
here,
enthusiasm.
We're like, what do we, how do we?
Yeah, no, so I just go by the seat of my pants and...
Member supported.
Okay, so there we go.
And
then we got if you didn't like it the first time, you can hear it again. So yeah, hang on. We got to jump through that. We'll pad over here. So it's been kind of a... Oh, here we go.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the gyps in the BC.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is Saturday.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, what is it, May 20th?
Yeah, 20th. May
2018, and you...
Well,
you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
Yeah. And at 5 minutes after
all right, here we go.
We are bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Yeah, and I think the news that we'll get into, one of the items I thought was pretty interesting was, I guess it happened right there in Congress.
Okay.
That they were a speaker was giving a talk.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it stopped.
Okay.
And he goes, all right, folks, was that me or was that AI?
Cue the Jeopardy music, right?
Turns out it was AI.
Yeah.
And everybody else is sitting there, couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes, getting better and better.
He goes...
By the week.
Yeah. He goes, and I did not practice this speech. I did not say anything or anything else. We just told the AI, here's some of the... it learns from a few of the phrases listening to you for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it can pick up, and then you can tell it a topic to talk about, and it totally creates it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you combine ChatGPT, which is very good at getting a prompt and then creating an entire story or report on that topic. And then you, instead of having it spit out text on a screen, you have that routed to text-to-speech software, and you make the voice somebody that you know of. And it's a lot easier to do when it's somebody who gets paid to talk into a microphone for a living.
And
hey, wait a minute.
Yep.
But what's really scary, though, is they're really worried about this upcoming elections, you know, the big 2024 elections, because some of the ads that they have produced are pretty scary. And if you put that up on the web and that, they don't have to go out on national TV, but if people are watching them on the web, through, you know, their news source or wherever they're getting it, they could be very easily misled that this is true, that is true, or and was never really said.
No actual person.
But you'll swear up and down.
But I heard him.
Yes, you'll swear. And they can sit there and have their voice, you know, their face there.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they're giving some other speech, but you, unless you're a lip reader, you might not know.
Yeah. It's been tough for a while with being able to cut together pieces of existing news. Editing has gotten better and better.
Yeah.
But there's always been that, you know, that something doesn't sound right.
A little bit of a separation.
Right.
Yeah. Uncanny Valley.
Which is interesting. So what evolutionary urgency required the development of the Uncanny Valley? What looked human but wasn't that made us wary of things that looked human but aren't?
In if you know.
Yeah, there should be some evolutionary pressure for that.
That's a good segue right there. We shouldn't tell folks, if you got questions or comments on this, please pick up the phones and give us a call, 585-966-5299, or toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'd love to hear from you and your opinions on where you think this might be going. Is it good? Is it bad?
You know, a lot of people panicking about it. We get questions in the office all the time. I can't trust anything anymore. Well, that's been that way for a while.
Yeah.
But it's getting harder and harder. Pictures worth 1,000 words until it's photoshopped and
right. Yes, or completely generated.
Yeah. Now generated AI. Yeah.
I saw one this past week that totally got me. It was a picture of what was purported to be a baby peacock, and it looked like a regular peacock, but shrunk down with big eyes, and it was very cute and had big blue feathers and things. But I found out a few days later, by the way, baby peacocks look like this. They don't look like that cute picture that you saw. That was completely manufactured by AI. And I said, oh, well, all right. Shows what I know.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's going to be pretty scary because, like you were saying, though, the technology has gotten so advanced. It's hard to tell whether it's real or whether it's Memorex.
There was a story on Mike Rowe's The Way I Heard It podcast where he talked about, I'm trying to find the actual episode, but it was like 60, 70 years ago. Uh-huh. The Associated Press, the big, well-respected news organization, asked one of their young reporters to go do an article on this topic. And so he found a professor that was the leading researcher on that topic and went to interview him. And so they talked about court jesters. Mm-hmm. And at one time, back in the Middle Ages, the jesters got together and formed a union demanding higher pay, shorter working hours. And one day a year, one of them could be elected to be king for a day. And the reporter took copious notes thank you, professor, thank you, and then went and published it. The next day, Associated Press, which then that story ends up in hundreds of newspapers that pick it up, they get chagrined. It's a completely fake story.
Oh boy!
And the Associated Press tries to sue the professor, and the professor says, "You didn't check any other sources?" Of course, it's April Fool's Day.
Oh, no.
So it's like the joke that on April 1st, you can't believe anything in the news.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of true every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, more and more.
Checking your news from multiple sources is never a bad idea, especially some, if you're worried about some having one kind of bias and one having a different kind of bias, then read them both.
And that's sort of
see what they agree upon.
Yeah.
And those are usually the facts, and everything else might be a little bit more spin.
Yeah. And the problem is, in today's internet, with the rush to publish, you got to beat the other guy by 5 minutes.
Right.
That no one is checking multiple sources anymore. So now the stories are couched in according to blank.
Yeah. Sources familiar with the matter.
And if you read all of the different stories that say exactly the same thing, it's from the same source.
Some one dude, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're all quoting the same person.
Yep.
Or same source, I should say.
My goodness.
But again, without doing the fact checking and everything else and checking the sources and that, and even checking the sources, because, that could also be misleading in, where it's the way they want you to spin it.
Yeah, and what's interesting is you can have two completely opposite views of the same event, what was the big one I read about? A dam burst and flooded a town.
Right.
And one newspaper heading was, thousands die when dam, floods their town. And the other headline was, new pasture land opens up with a reclaimed river.
Yeah. Yes. our drought problems have been solved. In
different downrivers and the same thing.
Yep. Well, what was about the songs? Let the bodies hit the floor, and it's raining men.
Right.
Are two sides of the same event?
Well, it's like the old adage. You know, you could be sitting around, a circle of folks, and you start a story, and by the time it comes back to you,
right? You're playing telephone. It's like not even close.
Yep. Even when you read a specific story, human memory is very fallible. I think it was a TV show where in a crowded like mall, they staged a purse snapping.
Okay.
And then they brought in the fake police to take witness statements.
Yeah.
They put a fake witness in swearing it was a tall, skinny woman.
Right.
That did the purse snatching when it was really a short, fat man. And the fake witness was able to sway the opinion of the other witnesses who actually did see the purse snapper.
Right.
You're always second guessing yourself. Well, I could have sworn I would have said that until you just asked me.
Right. And then that gets turned into art. There was a show that was on recently called Jury Duty. And the concept of the show is that it takes place during a trial, and it's being sold as this is a documentary about what it's like to serve on a jury. And it turns out that the judge, the counsel on both sides, the plaintiff, the defendant, and 11 of the jurors are all actors. And they're seeing how this one person reacts to the story and building an entire multi-episode show around this. So they get sequestered. Yeah. They end up in a hotel. Hotel's got cameras. And so it's, how does somebody behave like this when they're not being watched? And it's sort of a hero's journey of going through all these things. And all of the people, it's a lot like watching, The Office or other workplace comedies where everybody's just slightly eccentric, mm-hmm. and they're trying to play it, but they're not trying to play it too hard so the guy gets wise to what's going on. But it was a tremendous show. I encourage everybody to check that out. Jury Duty. You can find that online.
It is an experience. I mean, I've been on Jury Duty 3 times, and it is a daunting task and feeling, going through that whole process. I recommend everybody, at least try it once. If you're called to jury duty, try it, because it is an eye-awakening experience.
It's nothing like you see on TV.
No, not really.
There's no surprise witness that rushes in with the exonerating evidence at the last second.
There's a lot of downtime is what the parts
long
that I was
lunches.
Involved. Yeah, it was a lot of that.
Well, I can remember one. I sat. I got called in the one day, and they were going through, calling 30 and 40 people. So we get called in, go into the room, and of course they picked the 12 of us.
Right.
So we're finally picked and said, "All right, tell you what, we're gonna do lunch. Here's an hour and a half. Be back here in an hour and a half." We come back in the hour and a half, sit down, ready to start. Judge comes out and says, "Thank you very much for your service, but they came to an agreement."
Yep.
So you got a free lunch.
Free lunch. The day off, paid for work. And my time for serving jury duty was up.
Another 10 years or whatever it is. Yeah. The part I loved was when they put in all capital letters, really big font, "No digital devices of any kind." And they tell you that, and they say it in their voice call recordings. "Please come and show up to blah, blah, blah. Make sure to not have any digital recordings." This means know this, know that, know this. And they've got a big, long list because they've had everybody try to sneak in everything they could over the years.
Yeah, definitely.
So the list goes on and on and on. And you get done, and you end up in the courtroom. And what's the first thing you see? Oh, cameras, microphones, full-on computers, video system.
That's their thing. I even had to turn my watch off once. I had to go to traffic court with someone. And then the funny thing is the judge called a recess because his phone rang, and he had to take the call and ran out.
Hang on a minute. I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a wife.
Yeah.
Yes, honey, I'll get the milk.
Yep. Even the judge has to answer to someone.
That's true.
Quarter bread and a loaf of milk.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
In other news, the governor of Minnesota, let me get that window back, has banned TikTok in Minnesota.
Okay.
And how is he going to do that?
That doesn't
matter. Tell me more about that.
It's called the World Wide Web.
Yeah. So somehow you're going to have a geographic location set on your phone so that if you're in Montana, TikTok doesn't work. And if you don't already have the app, you cannot download it from anywhere.
Boy, I hope they haven't heard of VPNs.
Yep. Or change the DNS.
Sure.
That was one of the big things about, you know, we talked about the Great Firewall of China, about Chinese censoring the internet by having their own DNS, so you can't get to, say, New York Times story about something in China. So people started writing 8.8.8.8 on bulletin boards, which is Google's DNS.
Right.
So now you can get to all of those websites the Chinese government doesn't want you to get to.
There's what's funny, I see it once in a while on ham radio. It's like later at night, around, I'd say, New York State time, around 7, 8 o'clock, all of a sudden a few Chinese stations will pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only up for maybe a half hour max, and then they disappear.
Yep. Well, he said he's doing this to protect the rights of Minnesota residents. Montana residents, because TikTok is run by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. So it's possible that your data is going to China.
You think?
They're imposing a $10,000 per day per violation fine. So if 50,000 people in Montana use TikTok, that's 50,000 times 10,000 per day.
Well, I guess they probably could nail them if they wind up, you know, seeing some Montana resident posting something current.
Right. So how are they going to enforce the law?
And
is the technology supposed to know if you're in Montana or not?
Yeah, I was going to say, what if they're just over the border?
We
go along the border and just step over.
We have already seen problems with gambling websites that install a geolocation tag on your computer to prove you're in a state where gambling is legal.
Mm-hmm.
And that location app just causes so many problems with every other app. It's slow and buggy, and computers are crashing all the time. Mm-hmm. We turn that off and everything works fine. Well, then I can't get to my gambling site. Then turn it on when you want to gamble, I guess. The opponents are saying that the Montana governor has signed a bill that infringes on the First Amendment rights of Montana residents by banning platforms from allowing you to speak freely, which...
freedom of speech.
Yeah. So I have to see what happens the other way. I'm hearing kind of the same sort of worries in the airplane community. DJI is a Chinese company that makes quadcopters and more.
And they're
among the best.
Yeah, high quality.
High quality. And the problem we've seen in the hobby community is that the FAA makes no difference between a hobbyist airplane that you fly in your backyard and a drone with GPS that anyone can crash into a building.
Right.
Because you buy one at Walmart and you don't have any training on how to use it.
For a while, they were segmenting them based on mass, right? Like if you under
250 grams, you don't need the FAA certification or registration.
Right.
So DJI specifically makes one that's 249 grams.
Right.
But it doesn't have much of a range, much of an altitude.
Sure.
So they're very popular in electrical line surveys and crop surveys. In fact, that was one of the examples. Was it Homeland Security who's really pushing this, you know, a drone registration? They cited that a DJI drone took pictures of a field of some crop and then reported that back to the Chinese government so they could underbid us on buying the crop.
Okay.
What?
I've also heard that they're very popular with smokestack inspections, people that want to see the inside of those and make sure that none of the tiles or the bricks are loose or what have you.
We used to joke, my father was an environmental engineer at Kodak for 40 years, and we joked his job was to climb down inside smokestacks and make sure that they weren't polluting too much.
Yeah. cough, cough, cough.
Yeah, now you have a robot to do that for you.
Yeah.
Get all all the fun toys.
Yeah.
But people also want to get like their roof inspected or things like that. Or the one I've also seen, it's very big in the real estate industry. If you want to take a picture of all of the land that you have available for sale.
And just the layout. Besides having the pictures inside, they can do an aerial view to show your neighborhood.
You can use Google Maps, but that's a 10-year-old picture.
Yeah.
Right.
You can get live, real-time pictures with camera platforms.
And high-def video now. Yeah. So if you want to see your lakefront property, you can do that.
The difference that we're seeing and the Academy of Model Aeronautics is trying to push us in the FAA, recreational flyers, we want to fly our airplanes. Mm-hmm. Drone camera operators want to take pictures.
Yeah.
And so that's another big distinction. You know, we want to fly for the sake of flying. They want to fly to take pictures.
Okay.
Okay, that's another nice way to segregate the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You already need, we call it Part 107, a commercial license to fly commercially.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to fly your airplane and charge somebody for it, you have to have a Part 107 license, which is almost as bad as getting a real pilot's license.
Yeah.
A full-scale pilot. But then on the other side, a lot of the irony is if you want to fly an ultralight, you don't need a license at all.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but if you want to fly a model of an ultralight, you need a license.
Do you know where paramotors fall into that? Is that considered an ultralight or an experimental?
Ultralight, experimental, yeah.
It's like a powered parachute?
Yeah, a parachute with a fan on it.
Right.
When we went to a big air show called Sun and Fun this spring, they had 5 paragliders with light-up fans. And they did a big nighttime demo, and it was really cool.
That'd be cool to watch.
And the announcers, as the people were starting to walk out to take off, they're wearing a giant fan on their back, and the guy says, "Oh, you can really tell the pilots are into flying when they have a giant propeller on their back." So, yep.
Yes. No, it looks interesting. I mean, they've got essentially chainsaw engines, or probably something a little bit beefier than that.
And if your motor dies, you're in a parachute.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You have a built-in glide slope.
The problem is that you got to have really low wind because they say the motor is only good for 10 miles an hour, so. Yeah, about a 5-mile-an-hour wind is all you can fly against.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus all that weight, though, that's on your back.
Well, you're hanging from the strap when you're in the air.
Yeah, you sit on a little seat.
Yeah, I know that, but
do you ever jump out of airplanes in the military?
No. Why? That's one thing I
Why jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
Yeah, something is flying when you can wait and let it land and walk out safely. I never understood that, but I've got a couple friends that love doing that type of stuff, and it's like,
Different
strokes, man.
At the one parachute drop they did, one of the guys was doing his 10,000th jump.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, tell you what. We're going to take a quick break here, folks, but we encourage you to please pick up the phones, give us a call. The number is 585-966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with more talks, and if you got other comments and topics you'd like to for us to discuss, please pick up the phones and give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple moments.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And we are moving right along, like I was telling folks before. The streams are up. The chats are going. And the phones are open, so please give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. If you've got questions or different topics, we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants today,
so to speak. Yeah.
And
so, where can people get those streams, Steve?
Soundbites.org.
Very good.
Over on the left-hand side, we have a link to our YouTube stream. We are also,
doing one chat room now.
Okay.
Yeah, I just thought I got to bring the chat up because Apple. Yeah, Nick used to do the usually does the chat. So we're streaming live on YouTube at youtube.com/@soundbites.org, and we're also on Twitch at Soundbites.
Very good. So that's the place where you can see and listen to the show live,
and all of the after shows are there as well.
Very good.
Yeah, so someone put in the chat, it was a lot of the xenophobia about Chinese companies. We would be incensed, and we are incensed, when Russia bans a U.S. company or when China bans a U.S. company. Oh, you can't do that, you know, but when we ban a Chinese company, that's okay?
Yeah, a lot of this, you know, seems pretty hypothetical. I haven't.
Yeah, and it's never been proven that anything is actually happening.
Right. Yeah, so they're theoretically going to do something potentially unconstitutional on the basis of entirely hypothetical argument.
Well, it goes back to the old phobias. I can remember back in the day when I was growing up. Anything
call
from
our number, can you?
Everything from China was considered junk.
And especially Japan. So that was what the comment in the chat was.
It was always, you know, don't if you saw made in Japan, you thought, oh, that's junk.
Yeah.
And now they make some of the best quality, high-tech stuff that you couldn't believe.
Well, and that's our own fault because we didn't let them have a military after the war. So they concentrated on rebuilding their own infrastructure and engineering. Yeah, there was a message in the chat that the phones aren't working. We're going to have Dave try... the answer phone and
no, they're dead.
Their phones are dead. Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay, because we're having too much fun here anyway.
Is there a button we can push?
Not on the phones that I'm aware of. And
all right, Rob, if you're listening, the phone. So if you go to soundbites.org, in the left hand side, there are a few links to our link list to our poll. And one of them is the Soundbites chat. So the poll is still up from last week about Google I.O. and all the things that Google announced.
Okay.
We're up to 149 votes, and nice. So far, meh, has 40%. And then I love all the choices is 30%. So it's just like most polls, most people either hate it or love it. A couple of people in the middle think it's okay.
Things I was working on this past week was trying to see if I could set up my own fake voice.
One thing I was working on this week, there, see, it works better when you press the red button that says on, was trying to set up my own fake voice. Like, there was a website I went to that you can speak a few sentences, and then it's going to try and come up with a fake voice entirely upon that. And, you know, wasn't it, who did the voice of Siri? Susan Bennett?
Yeah, it was just an actress, and she didn't know she was doing it.
And she had to read word after word after word after word. But that was, what, 2008 or so? And then they developed an entire voice based on that. So it's just so much easier now.
Which is interesting because the voice of Siri in Britain was a well-known comedian.
It was?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so we didn't know who this actress was. She was a character actress, and you had been in a bunch of things.
Right.
But not one of those that you can tell the voice of, oh, I know that person.
Right.
But yeah, so in England, it was a comedian. And so
amazing.
They changed it now. So the voice, there are AI-generated voices available in Siri on your iPhone that you can change. I kind of like the British one or the Australian one.
John Briggs is best known for his voiceover work, particularly as the British voice used by Apple's Siri virtual assistant software.
Now, pre-Siri, it was the GPS giving you directions.
Right.
And you could get celebrity voices, and there was one with James Earl Jones doing
Darth Vader.
Telling you to go around and around. And you could even get a GLaDOS.
Okay.
where it gave you the wrong directions. GLaDOS is a well-known AI computer in a science fiction franchise that lies to you all the time.
Right. It's the Portal franchise?
Yeah.
Right.
The cake is a lie.
Right.
Yeah, no, I was checking the phones in the other office.
Okay.
Nope. So the whole, maybe the whole district is
dead?
Yeah,
the whole sounds...
I got the voicemail for someone who works at the school. So.
Yeah, so it's forwarding to someone.
That's right. So we'll talk about the week and see what's been going on.
Yeah.
We'll make sure to bring up whatever we've been working on.
You can post your questions in the chat.
Yeah, post your questions there, folks. And like Nick says, keep it clean. And
so one of the other things I've been doing is looking for... I have my phone charger cable next to the bed so I can plug in my phone and go to sleep. And it keeps falling down on the floor. So I wanted to make or find a little hook that I could put, or some type of little donut or something that I could put on the cable so that I could hook it onto the side of the bed frame so that I would know where it is when I reach for it and I don't have to roll all the way and nearly fall out of the bed to get the cable. So I went over to Thingiverse and I got a model. I had to look through several different ones to find one that would fit. And now I've got one and I'm going to print it out on the 3D printer and see if it will hold my charging cable so that I can do that. The other problem I had was, and this is going to sound really dumb, right? So the toothpaste. The toothpaste that I use has just a regular cap, like from the 70s. You know, you twist it on, twist it off. But all my kids' toothpastes and my wife's toothpaste have a big wide cap so that you can stand it up. So all of theirs stand up in the medicine cabinet, and mine falls over and knocks everything over and falls into the sink and creates a big mess. So I found a guy who took, and he made essentially like a donut, and the inside hole of the donut is just wide enough for the cap on my toothpaste. So now I can wedge that on there, and now my toothpaste proudly stands and stands up next to the rest of them.
As going back to your cable, a simple thing there is you can get the command hooks.
Yes.
And what I've done for the wife, excuse me, is I just put one on the side of the bed frame there because, you know, she likes to have her phone there and charging and that.
Sure.
And all you have to do is take, put one of those little hooks on the side and you take a zip tie.
Okay.
And you put the zip tie down the cable to about where you want it hanging.
Okay.
And just put it around the cable, tighten it up just a little bit, and put it on the hook.
Hmm.
And it holds it right there. But yet you can still give some space to have it pull.
Okay, good tip. I do have some zip ties, and I can get some of those hooks. I can get those on the way home.
Yeah, I mean, Home Depot and Lowe's and all the command hooks I love. I also, for her, when in the kitchen, you know, she was always having... recipes of that sitting on the counter, and she goes, "This is so inconvenient." So again, I found these little, like they look like little clothespin, by command.
Okay,
put one on the cabinet, which is white cabinets. Put it on there. Now when she's cooking, she just boop pops it on there.
It's at eye level. And you can read it.
Yeah,
and it stays
you can put them
the...
wherever you want. The nice thing about it is, if all of a sudden you want to take it off not use it anymore, there's just that little tab you pull down. No, it doesn't leave any marks or anything else.
Neat stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Might be time for me to check that out.
Yeah. Same with in the shower. She has the loofah, you know, on a string. Put one of the hooks in there. Works great.
That's cool. Good to know.
Yeah.
Anything good going on in the chat?
Well, I like while they're arguing about... past Chinese hackers that have broken into places.
Oh.
Well, all
hackers have broken into places, no matter where they're
from. I was going to say, it's just not Chinese. You could go the whole gamut.
I'm sure we're hacking them, too.
The Russians.
Yeah.
How many Russians or South Africa and everything else? I mean...
Well, that's why, you know, I can't believe that Russia uses Microsoft Windows or China uses Microsoft Windows. Why would you use an adversarial country software? Because they might be spying on you. So we get mad when other companies, you know, blame us, but then we go ahead and blame them.
Yeah, I mean, it's all finger pointing.
What the interesting thing is I've always wondered what would happen if aliens actually did come would we unite to fight them, or would we still bicker among ourselves?
Probably both.
Probably both.
We'd
yeah.
unite for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. There was an interesting episode of something Outer Limits type thing years ago. George Clinton, the Funk Master.
P-Funk,
yeah. Aliens showed it. So it starred Robert Guillaume. So that's how long ago it was. Aliens showed up and they wanted all our black people.
Okay.
But only dark-skinned black people.
Okay.
Light-skinned they didn't want. So they had a level of blackness. So Robert Guillaume is pretty dark-skinned, so he would go. But his daughter was pretty light-skinned, so she wouldn't go. And they set up an MCI 800 number for the country to vote on to let the aliens take the black people. And they would fix all our problems. So as a couple of examples, you know, they cleaned up the East River. And they you know, closed the hole in the ozone to show they had this amazing technology that would fix the earth if we just gave them our black people. And France said, you can have ours. and the aliens said, no, we want the U.S. ones. And then so Robert Guillaume was part of the government. And so his bosses were telling him to agree to it. And so he's going through the black community trying to convince them to agree to it. And they said, well, you should tell them the aliens showed you it was paradise, and then the white folk won't vote for it because they wouldn't want us to have any of the paradise.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. No, the product of its time, I think.
Yeah.
My goodness.
But what was the other one? Robert Heinlein, Farnham's Freehold. A white family had a black friend that was at their house after the nuclear war, and so they went in the bomb shelter. When they came out of the bomb shelter, all the black people were in charge. And they were about to kill the white family until the black kid comes out, and now he's the prince and save the white family.
Oh.
It's interesting when it's science fiction, because you can have these, yeah. you know, dry, even in Star Trek, where they had the Frank Gorsham, half black, half white. Well, the other guy's obviously inferior because he's black on the left side, where I'm black on the right side. That's the better one.
Star-bellied sneeches here, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Stars upon thars, yes.
Yeah.
So my son has been playing the new Zelda game all week, and I think he's just about to the tail end of it. But I could not believe how much content there was in this game. He has been working overtime like it's his job, this game.
Isn't Zelda like a 40-year-old game to begin with?
Yeah. I mean, the franchise starts with the original yeah. NES, you know. It's part of the original series, you know, if you're classically trained, yeah. as I am, in the 80s to have played the original. And truthfully, I have a big soft spot in my heart for the
original.
Do you
know the Konami code?
Of course.
Well, that's the big thing now at RIT. RIT just got notoriety for They're training and
game designer and game yeah. development courses. Yeah.
Game development. I mean, sure. We're like one of, top five?
All those parents that told their kids you can't make any money playing video games? Well, now you can make money playing video games professionally.
Create
and make
them.
Money creating
yeah,
them.
Creating them.
Right. Well, and it's a bigger industry than the entire film industry by dollars. It produces more revenue.
Well, that's the thing. You know they... I've just seen lately, they've been bringing back some of the older games, you know, like the old Pac-Man mm-hmm. or, you know, Frogger and that, and you see them in different TV programs playing this, and compared to what they've got out for graphics nowadays.
Oh, it's reality.
I mean, it's...
In fact...
unbelievable.
Meta is going to release their new virtual reality headset, the Quest 3, that's due out later, I think in this fall, it's sometime later this year, that they're working on putting super high-res screens in front of each of your eyes, and it's going to be able to work better and not make you seasick, and it's going to completely work. I was amazed when I learned about cameras that can shoot in all directions at once, mm-hmm. so it creates like a 360 view,
yeah.
So you can upload those to YouTube. They have a YouTube VR section, and then if you've got these goggles, you can sit on your sofa or on a stool or whatever and watch the video play. But while the video is playing, say you're at Niagara Falls, right? And they're at the edge of the falls. You're watching the water go over. You're watching. You can look up and watch the birds fly. But then you can turn your head around and look behind you and see all the other people who are also standing there behind you. And it's all recorded in every direction at once.
They used to be tens of thousands of dollars. Now you can get a basic one for a couple $100.
So what I've been working on...
The Meta goggles?
360-degree cameras.
Yeah, the 360 cameras are under $400 now. And the
some of quests, them are pushing $300.
Yeah, the quests are doing that. So one of the guys that I like on YouTube is sticking this off the front of a bicycle, and he's doing essentially a vlog where he's talking to the camera as he's riding his bike, and you can look around and see everything that's going on. And you know, he posts this little thing and gets done and says, all right, I'll see you tomorrow, and he does it again. And every day you can see what he's doing, and of course you can just watch whatever he's elected to broadcast. Or you can look around and see, oh, look, he's on that same route that he was 2 days ago, and you can see what's changed since then. There's a lot of neat stuff that's going on in this area.
Yeah. There's an app called Filmic Pro for iOS and Android that you put on your phone, and it can record from both front and back cameras simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
They originally showed it off as like a documentary where you're shooting a subject and yourself asking the questions, because normally you shoot a documentary, you need another camera on the other side
to do the reverse.
Yeah, but now you can do it both. But I've seen people doing the same thing with that,
right?
Yeah, you know, on bikes, or we're putting them on airplanes now. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of guys with cameras stuck to the brim of their hat, so they can watch the airplane and shoot.
Yeah, you see a lot of motorcyclists and everything else going around. Well, even dash cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, on Facebook, you can see so many folks doing dash cam recordings and that, you know. And there's a couple companies out there trying to really promote them to help protect you in case you're in an accident. You've got proof that, you know, and they're so small.
Yeah.
In the cycling community, there's a company that has been making, you know, those little blinky LED lights that sometimes cyclists will have on the back of their bikes that'll blink red. There's a company that's got one of those that also has a tiny little camera in it that's a high-def camera, so that if a car gets too close to you and perhaps causes an accident, you can go back and figure out what car it is and potentially even find the license plate. In case there's a hit and run situation.
Yeah, just the technology in cars now. I mean, I've got a 2020 Ford, and you know it's got the rear view camera.
Sure.
That compared to my van at work, the clarity difference, due to the camera, is unbelievable.
Yeah, my 2015 car has a little tiny camera for the backup camera, and my wife's 2019 car has a giant screen for the camera.
Yeah, mine, you know, on the 2020, the Ford, compared to, I think my van is a 2017.
Yeah.
Just in the 3 years difference.
Yeah.
The difference in cameras, and it's like, whoa, the clarity is unbelievable.
There's a front-facing camera that watches the lane markings and watches for speed limit signs. And I don't know if anyone would access that in case of an accident. Although my boss's Tesla, there's so many cameras around it. You get too close, the screen lights up and says, watch out, you're on camera, get away.
Well, mine is the car that I have. I mean, I could be set the cruise control, say, for 55.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going the lane and all of a sudden somebody pulls out in front of me.
Yep, automatically slows down.
Or if I'm going along a highway and all of a sudden it's super dark, it'll automatically turn on the high beams until another car comes. Yep. Then it shuts it down.
Well, I have found that closure distance, because in my wife's car, there's three settings.
Yes.
And even at the longest setting, that's too close for Shirley.
Oh, it's too close.
So I'll be driving along and she's like...
I'm gonna slow down. No, I did a trip recently out to Texas, and we got to rent some stuff, and we had reserved some cars and thought, oh man, this is gonna be great, we're gonna drive something new, because my wife and I are the kind of people that buy a car and maintain it and keep it until it completely rusts all to heck and is no longer registrable, let alone insurable. So we get to Texas and I figure, all right, we're gonna try something. And we have a minivan at home and we've had it for a long time, and we get there and thought we'd get some kind of sports sedan or something else. And Turns out, no, they were all out of things. They said, well, we've got these full-size pickup trucks, you know, that are gigantic. They look like a dump truck, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, probably F-450s.
And my wife says, no, that's we need to be able to seat more people than that and so forth. So I said, well, all right, we've also got these minivans. So my wife hung her head immediately. She's like, 1,000-something miles away, and I'm driving a minivan.
Very good.
But it had the start-stop. It had the radar cruise control. I kind of liked the radar cruise control. I could see the appeal.
I did a test on it where we came off the expressway and come up to a red light, and it stopped.
Oh.
And then when the light turned green, well, no, it didn't stop because of the light. It stopped because there was a car in front of me.
Okay.
When that car in front of me pulled away, it accelerated out and followed him along again.
That's great.
So I was playing a little game with myself to see how long I could go without touching the pedals.
Yes. So there's a company called Comma that you should look at. They're at comma.ai. And they have made a system that you can plug into many different cars.
Oh, and it uses the phone for all the camera sensors that your car doesn't have.
Right. And it uses AI to detect, and if you've got like electric power steering, which most cars have these days,
mm-hmm.
it will tap into that to do lane control. And it will tap into electric throttle and electric brakes to do cruise control. And it essentially adds driving aids to cars that may not have come with them, and they're also working on autopilot-like.
Yeah, they're calling it systems. Autopilot. I think that was their biggest mistake. Enhanced cruise control, yeah, but not autopilot.
Right.
So they've said you set the cruise control and then you go in the back and make a sandwich.
Yeah.
That's all you need. But this company, Comma, is doing things very similar to what Tesla and other companies that are trying to do autonomous driving are doing.
And there's all sorts of rumors that Apple's doing it too, but behind the scenes.
Right. But this you plug into a car you already own. You don't have to buy a particular model. So it needs to be a fairly recent car, but it's very surprising. I'm looking forward to seeing.
It works with 250-plus car models and more.
Yeah.
I'm posting a link.
It's definitely worth checking out. I got to watch a couple of videos about the engineering team and what kinds of inputs they're using and how do they inject the, no, you're getting too close to the, you know, yellow line. You need to back away from it. So we'll put a little steering input here that keeps it away. And they've done a really impressive job with that. And then they also worked on, well, how hard are we allowed to hit the brakes and, mm-hmm. and things. So they went to the ISO and said, well, to do it, you need to impact only up to this many G's. So they said, all right, well, we're going to take that and we're going to back off from that even more. And then they said, all right, we'll make that our max G factor for deceleration. And they have to make sure you're not going around corners too fast.
Yep.
There's a lot of stuff going on. But I really thought it's come a long way. I think they're on their third or fourth generation of the hardware now. But impressive stuff. Comma.ai, check that out if you're even remotely into vehicles or autonomous driving.
Yep.
Okay. That music kind of tells me, folks, we have made it through the first hour. And as I don't know if most folks know or heard, our phone system does seem to be down. But if you want to go ahead and give us a note in the chat, we are taking questions in the chat. So by all means, please do that. Meanwhile, you know, take a little short break. We're going to be just gone for a few minutes, but we will be back with more conversations and love to hear your comments on what we're talking about. So, you know, take this little short break, but also check out the chat and jump in there and put your comments in, and we will be back in just a few more minutes with more of Sound Bites here on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901 Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And just like we promised, we are back to take more of your questions here on Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And again, for you folks that were maybe tuning in a little bit late, we're having problems with our phone system. They seem to be, down. So we're encouraging folks. Steve's got the chat up. And if you want to post a question there, please, by all means, put your questions in there. And if it is a question, say, about a computer or something, give us a little more background. My computer isn't working.
Yep.
That doesn't tell us a heck of a lot.
Yeah, we're so sorry to hear that.
What else you're running, how much RAM you have. But we do have a question in there waiting. Dan is wondering if there's a way to use a Windows program on a Chromebook. He's trying to program a GMRS.
Okay.
Offhand, I don't know, but can you run Wine on a Chromebook because it's Linux-based?
Not that I'm aware of.
Can you connect to... There are places, and I don't know if Microsoft is doing this directly, but there are places where you can spin up a Windows machine and then connect to it via a remote desktop.
Yeah, you could do a virtual Windows environment.
And I think Amazon is
offering that, too. I wonder if you can run, because I haven't tried it, whether you can run virtual Windows on a Chromebook.
Yeah, you'd need a VM. Well, in because it's mostly just a web page, you would need a web-based VM. And yeah, there's several of them. I don't know of any Windows ones offhand. We were just talking about some Mac ones the other day, where you can play old Mac games in an old Mac VM.
That's where having some, a lot of folks are quick to get rid of a lot of their older computers, and we've been saying it now for a couple of years. You know, that old computer, you stuffed it back into the closet and, you know, because it's maybe, you know, from the 2004 or whatever, you know, and it's old and slow. We're telling folks, pull it out, dust it off, see if it boots, and then put Linux on it. Linux is a great operating system. And as Nick always said, you know, it's like driving a car. You might not know where all the buttons are, but you slowly learn where they are. But it's got the basic things, you know, the steering wheel, the brake, and the gas pedal. Everything else might be rearranged a little bit, but all in all, they all drive the same. And the same with Linux. You learn a few things, and you can get it up and running. The nice thing about Linux is it comes in so many different flavors. And you can have it look like a Mac or a PC. I mean, speaking of the PC side, you can have it to where the toolbar is down along the bottom, your buttons over there in the left-hand corner that you can click on and see all the menu items that you want. There are literally thousands of programs that you can put on a Linux box that will do the same things that you're doing with Windows. I was a prime example of that in that I was the only thing that was stopping me from going to Linux was Quicken. I needed a program that was going to look a lot like Quicken. I've used Quicken for decades, and I've just grown used to it. Well, I did a little research, and whoa, there's a free program out there, and it's been around for decades also, called Money Dance, and oh, it's free. And it runs on all systems, whether it's Mac, PC, Linux. It's all out there. You can even put it on a Chromebook.
Yeah, and I'm looking like there is Wine, because there's the commercial program Crossover allows you to run Windows apps on Mac, Linux, or Chrome, and you install it through the Google Play Store. It's a commercial program.
Okay.
But it's based on Wine, so
I don't want to.
Yeah, Wine. Wine is not an emulator,
right?
But Wine lets you run Windows-based programs on Unix-based computers. you have to install and configure and run it yourself, where Crossover is a commercial version that has a prepackaged installer that works a lot easier. So that may be a way around around it to get Windows programs on your Chromebook.
But I would, yeah, I would also take a quick look over at Microsoft themselves. They've got a cloud product called Azure, A-Z-U-R-E, and one of the services they provide in Azure is a virtual machine running Windows. And again, that's not free, but I take a look at their pricing. Maybe that's something that would be acceptable.
Do what you want it to do, yeah.
Maybe that would be something that works. The nice thing there is that you don't have to have the hardware. You just have to be able to connect to a virtual machine. And I think the important thing to check out would be, will you be able to access the desktop of that machine through a web browser? I'm presuming they're using Chrome on a Chromebook, but that would be the thing to check out.
Backtracking just a little bit, I had somebody asking me this past week what I meant. What I'm talking about is the different flavors of Linux. And I had last week told folks, you know, pick up a few flash drives. You know, you can buy 3-pack, 4-packs of flash drives. Mm-hmm. And download the various and burn the disk images flash them to these flash drives. Because within Linux, if you have it boot off the USB instead of the hard drive, Linux will allow you to do a test drive.
Right.
It'll run a little slower because it's got to unpack things. But it will allow you to look and see what version of Linux you want, because there are so many different flavors of Linux depending on what you want to do. So I highly recommend picking up a few of them. I say, probably under $10 you could get 3 or 4 of them. Mm-hmm. Flash the images there. Test drive them. Because that's the beauty. You could have 3 different versions. Pop one in. Test some stuff out. All right. Excuse me. And then shut it down. Put it in a different one. And then compare what it does. Without actually spending all the time of doing the install and everything else. So you can literally test drive it and see what flavor you want.
Mm-hmm.
And go for that. And then make up your decision. Because, like I say, they have added so many great things within Linux. And the big feature that we talk about is, you don't see spyware, malware, and viruses on Linux as much as you do on all the other systems. Because the virus writers and spyware and malware people are going after the majority. And the vast majority of computers out there right now are both PCs and Macs. Chromebooks are starting to get it, but Chromebooks are protected anyways. They self-protect them. I'm never forget the time we were sitting here in the studio. Yep. Nick's machine got a Windows warning that he was infected. There was one problem, though, folks. He was running a Chromebook.
Wasn't running Windows, yeah. So Money Dance is a commercial program. Yep. The people in the chat are commenting on that. It's only $65 once.
Yeah.
Where Quicken has gotten really nasty.
You got to pay for by the year.
By the year. And if you stop, because I wanted to see what would happen. So my Quicken subscription expired. Mm-hmm. Quicken kept working, but every time I launched it, there was a giant ad saying you should buy the new version.
Of course.
And a third of the screen was a giant ad. So I only had 2/3 of the screen left for my thing. And it got so annoying that.
Oh, you couldn't disable it. It didn't have a X in the corner?
Nope.
Oh.
No, yeah. Once I got up to a certain version, after, because mine was due in April, mm-hmm. It shut right down.
Mine kept working like 6 months, because I was waiting for a sale to come around.
What and
I
version got it from, did you have, though?
2022, the latest one, for Mac. Maybe it's different on Windows.
Yeah, because it locked right up and said, nope, you got to register. It's not registered.
And registration is different than having an active license.
Okay.
Well, it shut the wouldn't let me into my Quicken checkbook.
Because on the Mac version, I was able to get in, but it was inundated with ads.
So I said, the heck with that. And I think, because they want to do the bundle package. They give you the license, and they want you to do online store.
Yeah, they want you to do it online, and no, I want my stuff offline.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Although, to their point, all your financial information is online already, because the banks have it, the other stores have it, but it's one less failure point that if Intuit, or now Quicken is not by Intuit anymore, if Quicken gets broken into, oh, you lose your stuff. I know banks are a lot more serious about their safety and protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, like, it works on all platforms, the Money Dance. It was so easy. I mean, I literally set it up, and I've gotten a few updates now that I've got, and it does it in the background, and it's no difference. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's even a little bit easier as far as setting stuff up in that within the Money Dance.
And if you want free updates and syncing with the banks, it's only $9 a month.
Yeah. But which I just go in, you know, every few days to my, because I like to keep tabs on my checking account.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly going in and checking on what that registry has and what I've got to.
Did that post yet? Did something post I wasn't expecting?
Yeah, just to do due diligence.
Did Shirley forget to give me a receipt? She used to tease me for checking my balance so often, making sure checks that
I
wrote posted. Yeah, and then one day she forgot to record a transaction from some store where she didn't get a receipt.
Because
I get a
receipt. You're off by however many dollars.
I get a receipt everywhere I go because I want to make sure I record it.
My late wife, God love her soul, she's got to be so proud of me right now. When I first met my late wife, Lori, you know, she was an accountant, CPA. And she'd sit there and watch me doing my checkbook. And, you know, the statement come in, yeah, don't, you know, I just talk about, you know, aren't you going to balance? I go, I just round. She goes, what? Okay. I says, well, if
you don't even use the sense, you
I says, depends on the check. You know, if it was for, say, $16.59, I put it in as 17. She goes, how do you balance? Pretty good, you know, on both.
Yeah.
I says, no, at the end of the year, I look at what the bank says I have and what I think I have, and it's usually a bonus because I'm always money ahead. She goes, no, you're supposed to check right to the penny. Oh, uh-oh. It used to drive her nuts.
You're up to 50 cents off on every single transaction.
And
you got to hope that half of them are headed one direction, rounded one way, and half are rounded the other.
Yeah. I never bounced a check in my entire life. You know, it always worked out. But then after she passed, I wound up getting into Quicken.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been using it ever since. And now a fanatic at it that, you know, I got to go in constantly, you know, at least a couple, two, three times at least a week just to check, like Steve was saying, you know, that I've recorded all the receipts and, yeah, I'm in sync with the other two.
Especially, you know, the gas station takes 3 or 4 days to process through my account. Wegmans, I get a ping on my account that it posted before I'm out of the lane.
Right.
Same with BJ's. BJ's, you're not even out of their parking lot, whether it's for gas or groceries, and it's already into your account.
And the fast food places are the same way.
Yeah. So they must be posting instantly, because at our store, when you get through the end of the day, you run your end of day, and then you close out your credit card machine. And that's when it posts.
Right.
Because you have to pay a fee every time you post.
Right. So they must have a different arrangement.
They must have a different arrangement. They have so many transactions, they probably got lower fees.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
But we had another story that came from Security Now, which was interesting. Gibson called it Microsoft's email extortion.
Okay.
So Exchange has had a sordid and amusing history of vulnerabilities.
Yes, Microsoft Exchange.
Microsoft Exchange is their mail server.
Right, mail and calendaring.
And a lot of corporations are using Microsoft Exchange. They also have web-based Exchange as part of Microsoft 365 and Outlook.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Microsoft is planning, it doesn't say exactly when yet, but they're planning on starting something called they're throttling and blocking email from persistently vulnerable Exchange servers.
Okay.
So they're going to block their own software.
Yep.
So
if it's been misconfigured or compromised?
No, just if it exists.
Is that what the article says?
If you are using an outdated and unsupported version of Exchange.
Right.
2003, 2007, 2010, 2013.
Okay.
Or you haven't patched your Exchange server recently.
Uh-huh.
Microsoft Online will block receiving mail. Hmm? So.
Block as in kick it back or yep. Block as in drop
they'll,
it?
They'll bounce it back. They'll bounce it back with an undeliverable error. If you have an if you're in an unsupported they have the different error numbers. If it's unsupported, then the error is unsupported version. If it's out, if there's a patch available that hasn't been installed yet, there's a different error message.
Hmm.
But users aren't going to know what to do with that. So
no, they're not.
If I'm at company X and I send a message to company Y,
right?
I get a message back, you know, error 405. I'm not going to know what to do with that.
No.
And so the Microsoft is blocking their own software for being vulnerable.
Right.
From mistakes they made.
Right.
And the fix is to buy a new Microsoft license for Exchange.
So it's sort of a name and shame for the people who aren't keeping up with,
right.
with modern so technology.
Someone at Microsoft obviously saw this huge revenue. You know, there's the latest Exchange vulnerability somebody found. 60,000 Exchange servers were publicly on the internet that hadn't been patched yet.
Mm-hmm. He probably got a bonus for it.
Yeah, and so it's going to be a new revenue. What I think is going to happen is people are going to stop using Exchange.
Yeah, well, so, or they'll say Microsoft will say, "Oh, but we can happily convert you and bring you up to speed.
Yeah.
Just come on to our subscription services."
So now that they've said they're going to do that, so in 5 years, when you know Exchange, you know 2020 is now out of support. Oh, okay. But for all those people that bought Exchange in the last 20 years,
right,
and suddenly Microsoft is changing the rules, we're not going to accept mail from you because you have an old version of our software. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it's just like in my world, I've had three different companies with software that I use go away from Microsoft Access.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so buggy, and every time they do updates or changing, it's like they're reconfiguring everything else that it breaks other stuff.
Yeah, most people don't like installing updates because it breaks something else.
Yeah, and three companies that I can state right. In fact, one of them just rolled out their latest version, and they've gone to another database program. Getting away from Access because it was causing too many issues.
Yeah, it's not just that you have to buy an Exchange server. You also have to buy Exchange client licenses. How many people are you connecting to your server?
Yeah.
So it's you know they get you at both sides. You can't just buy a server. You have to say, well, I got 50 people connecting, so I have to buy a 50 people license.
Right. Well, and the reason why people are running their own Exchange servers at first was because that was the only way to do it. But as time has gone on, as a person who ran email servers in the late 90s and early 2000s, that is not a job that I want anymore because mm-hmm. there are a million different ways that can get messed up and that people back then it was people filling up their POP email boxes with mail and then it was full and it would get bounced back to the sender. And people with big attachments that would never go through or really small data lines that we were trying to push things over. But these days, there's a lot to be said about turning that capital expense of a piece of equipment that you keep in your data center that you have to handle the care and feeding for, that mm-hmm. you have to keep up to date and patched.
There's no return on investment to your IT department. You can't say that they're making you money.
It's lost.
Yeah.
They're protecting you from losing money.
Yeah. But that doesn't show up on the bottom line.
But so, it's also costing you a lot more.
But if you can outsource that, or at least start managing a different kind of relationship where you have a vendor like Microsoft or any other email provider where you're paying them by the month or by the year, and they you can turn that into an operating expense instead of a capital expense, then it becomes much more predictable. You know what's going to happen. You can lock in terms through contracts, and you know what your expenditures are going to be. And for many businesses, that's a lot more predictability is great, because then you can do forecasts. Mm-hmm. So businesses really like that sort of thing.
Yeah. And part of the irony is in how bad Exchange is and how many vulnerabilities and errors that are found. Last year, there was a big one where a bug in Exchange lost everybody's mail. Just poof, gone. And
no recovery.
If you were lucky enough to have a backup. No recovery possible. You had to go to your backup. And Microsoft has such huge market clout that it didn't hurt them at all. You know, usually when a company has...
They're lucky, yeah. I mean, because,
data destruction,
you know,
bugs.
Some companies, if they lose contracts or that type of stuff, they're waiting on stuff. And due to lost business because, you know, it didn't get through.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you got to keep things up to date. The LastPass fiasco.
Yeah.
The bad guys have any LastPass user. The bad guys have your vault now, and it
host.
Wasn't as secure as you hoped if you've been a LastPass user for a very long time, because a LastPass engineer working from home had a vulnerable Plex server for watching TV shows on his computer. A 3-year-old vulnerability that he hadn't patched.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is companies try to put in auto patching systems and people get mad that changes are made without their knowledge. They give notices that patches are available and they never get implemented. It's actually against the law for a company to go in and fix software they've sold because they don't own it anymore. So there's this, the computer tampering law. If I want to, so the Exchange server, Microsoft could, because Microsoft knows there's mail coming from this vulnerable server. They could go into that server and fix the problem. But they're legally not allowed to. And they can try to send a message to admin at whatever the domain says it is.
Right.
But who knows if.
Postmaster.
Yeah. Is it admin? Is it postmaster? Is it webmaster? Is it George? And George that set up the Exchange server 4 years ago is now gone, and there's no one looking at those messages.
Right.
So it's the catch 22 that we need these bugs fixed, but we don't want to introduce any new bugs. And when a company has a problem, there's generally no a penalty except maybe a loss of reputation. And
which could be a big one.
Yeah. So there's actually been some rumblings in Congress about making companies liable for their problems, financially liable, instead of just losing your reputation.
Make regulatory compliance.
Yeah, so if there's a bug in your software that causes all this, you know, damage, then you're responsible. But then I released a patch 3 years ago, no one fixed it. No one installed that patch. Then who do you blame?
Well, or if you look at your EULA and the EULAs all say, We don't guarantee that this product is necessarily fit for anything, any kind of purpose. You know, it's the only time I've ever seen people spend money on something that the company itself says this product may not do what it was intended to do.
Yeah,
bury that in the legalese.
The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency (CISA) keeps a list of known exploited vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So these are vulnerabilities in software that have been patched but are still being exploited because not everyone has updated and installed those patches.
Right.
And they go back for years. In fact, the first one on the list is from 2004, from a Cisco denial of service attack. So if you're running a Cisco router that's old, someone could hack your router and prevent you from getting any internet traffic.
Right.
If you're lucky, that's all they do. So if you are, you know, any hardware you own, any software you have, you're responsible for keeping it updated. If you don't have an IT person doing that for you, which most of us at home don't, that's what we here do. We're your IT staff. You've got to keep all that updated yourself.
It's true.
Okay, folks, that music tells me we're going to take a short break, but you still got another half hour of sound bites coming up, so don't go anywhere. And like I said, right now, we got our phone system down right now, but If you would, please go to our chat and put in your questions, and we'll try to get to them. But we will be back just in a few moments right here at Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this last half hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
And I want to remind folks, our phone system is down. So if you've got questions of that, we'd be glad to answer them. Just go into our chat and post a question there, and we've been humming along and answering them there, so it doesn't slow us down any bit. But
yeah, and if you know how to fix our phone system, give us a call and let us know how.
Yeah, it's completely dead. There's no screen, so it's the other end.
Yeah,
it's this wherever the central box is.
Yeah, because I even went into some of the other offices and
see. Sometimes there's an error message on the screen that
their system's down. Maybe the storm going through took something out, or who knows.
Could be a lot of things.
Yeah. But we'll muddle through it and do our best that we can.
Yeah, we had a comment from Annoyed in the chat.
He ruins pizza, the Annoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're Plex. So Plex is a media organization program,
right,
that you can run on a computer, and then it lets you watch the movies and TV shows that you've saved on any computer on your network. But just like any software, you have to administer it. But the average casual person isn't going to do that, so it has to auto-update itself. We're seeing now a lot of programs are putting in auto-update, but still requiring you to click OK at the end, because they don't want to interrupt what you're in the middle of, too.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will make Plex available to the public internet, so when you're not at home, you can still watch the TV shows you have at home, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
But now you're exposing your home to the internet, the public internet, which means anyone can try to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And if any vulnerability is found, then the bad guys can jump on it.
And that's, you know, goes right back to, again, which we were talking about just last week. You are your own system administrator.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to do due diligence.
Yeah, don't ignore all those messages. Now, let me back up a step. That's the problem. Don't ignore the messages that say there's an update.
Yep.
The real messages that say there's an update. The fake messages, ignore. And that's the problem for average users. They don't know the real messages versus the fake messages. So one of the tips is, If you're on the web, in your web browser, and a message pops up and says something, it's probably lying.
Right.
Because it's an ad on a website, you're infected with a virus, mm-hmm. it's lying.
It's trying to manipulate you. Yeah.
But if you're in another program, you're on your desktop, it's in the notification window on your computer, that's probably a real message. And if you're unsure, you know, if it says Windows needs updating, or on the Mac, it says there's an OS update waiting for you. Go into your settings, go into check for updates, and look yourself and see if there's an update waiting.
It'll tell you
if there's an update waiting, rather than the fake message that says there's a problem, call this phone number. In fact, the more dire the message is, the more fake it is. Because I've seen some really dire red flashing screen. Don't turn off your computer. You're going to lose all your data.
Oh, with voice.
Voice speaking, yeah.
Yeah, they're using scare tactics to try. Because they figure even if they just get 1% of the folks out there, especially folks that are computer savvy, you know, and they try to terrorize them and think, I can't lose all this, you know. And it's like, yeah, you can. Just unplug it. It's just like when we get folks that'll sit there and you get those warnings, you know, your machine is infected, unplug it. Or if you open that email and it says, you know, this or that, unplug it. Because some of them will take you to other websites that won't let you off of it.
There's what's called a drive-by download.
Yeah.
That just displaying the ad in your web browser can download and install software. Because you're probably an administrator. It goes back to what we said a couple of weeks ago about that. If you log in as an administrator, bad software can install itself because you are already an administrator.
Yeah.
So you should run as a standard user and only go to the administrator account when you actually want to install software or run updates.
Yes. Which we've said, like Steve was just saying, there should be a whole, on your computer, if you say you got a family of five, there should just be one master account, and then every other person, including yourself, should have their own separate account as a user. Not an administrator, a user. That way, nothing else is going to get in there because it doesn't have the rights to install. So you just keep that one super user as the administrator. Everybody else is just a user. That will help keep your machine safe. Won't do it at all, but it'll certainly help cut down on a lot of use and abuse. And I don't care if a little Johnny or Mary get all upset because they can't install this game or that game.
Good.
Yuck, because those games could be very easily infected.
Or if the game itself isn't, how many toolbars does it install along the way? Because it's a free game, they got to get paid somewhere.
Or other spyware or malware is installed with it. And then we get folks, Steve and I have both seen this, that, you know, folks will sit there, I didn't install that. What software did you put it?
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you, well, yeah, it also had all this other bloatware. And you just got click happy and just said, yeah, to get quick through it so it would install. You also agreed to have all these other trial programs installed on your machine. So you did do it.
Now, there were a bunch of Apple security updates that came out this past week, right? So macOS 13.4 came out, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday. And iOS.
Yeah. I thought that was more feature updates than the last security one.
And there was a rapid security response.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. That scared people because we hadn't seen it before.
It was a new thing.
And it's a notification, so it was legitimate, but a lot of people didn't believe it because they'd never seen anything like that before.
Right.
But
New versions of tvOS, watchOS, iOS, iPadOS. Yeah,
every OS.
And
yeah.
macOS.
And what's interesting and a point of complaint in the security world is that Apple never gives very much detail about what they fix because they don't want the bad guys to use that knowledge to write exploits. Just like what happens in Windows, you know, Patch Tuesday is quickly followed by Exploit Wednesday.
Yeah.
But Apple is now starting to and has been pointing to the CVE of the bug that was found and paying their bug bounty. So I'm looking at the Safari 16.5 that came out a couple of days ago.
Right.
Out of bounds read was addressed. Buffer overflow was addressed. Yeah. And they're also acknowledging who found the bug. So some of them were just individual researchers. Google's threat analysis group is a big security researcher. Out of bounds read. So. Typically what happens is there's a bug where something goes wrong, and that's always the inroad of what can we make that bug do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a bug in WebKit, which is the web rendering engine, that processing a maliciously crafted web page may lead to arbitrary code execution.
That's
which
the
is
bad one.
Their buzzword, meaning if you go to a bad website, it can do anything it wants on your computer.
Right.
Steal all of your files, you know, install anything else at once.
And there was another one that was fixing a memory usage bug called a free after use.
Yeah, use after free.
So when you're a programmer and you need to do some work, you need to reserve a certain amount of your computer's RAM to hold the results of that work and to be ready to do processing. And you ask the computer, okay, I need this much RAM. And the computer lays out and reserves that for you to do your work. And when you get done, you're supposed to say, okay, I'm done with that part. You can release that back for the next thing that needs some RAM. And if you don't release it, then the next time something happens, your computer runs a different instruction and says, okay, I need some RAM to do this, and then it doesn't release it. And if it loops through that enough times, you find out that all your RAM is being used up, and your computer will eventually get really slow or will crash. Or will the app will spontaneously quit, and it just it won't work the way it's supposed to.
And a lot of times that's why a lot of times that's why rebooting makes your computer feel faster,
right?
Because it is faster because you cleared all that stuff out.
So that does.
I'm going through the list of security releases, and it looks like most of these patches were all security related.
There's an awful lot of web based ones that seem to get the rapid security response.
Because that's most people's biggest interaction with the rest of the world. So if you never connect your computer to the web and you never get any email, you just use it in your own house and never install any third-party software.
Yeah.
Just use the software it came with.
Or, stuff you wrote yourself.
Yeah, right? Or stuff you wrote yourself. Although we have seen some...
Because it's the late 70s and we're doing that now.
Yeah, we have seen sometimes computers have come with viruses pre-installed because there's some third-party software the manufacturer decided to put on to get a little extra money.
Yeah.
So make sure you run your updates.
Well, that's one thing. I was so happy when I got that new Dell just last October. Just a few months, about a month ago now. It went to do an update, which it likes to do. And it came back and said, "We're sorry to inform you, but your machine does not qualify for Windows 11. I go, "Yes!" Because now with them to really trying to push building in advertising on Windows 11, that's going to pork a lot of people off.
I suspect it will.
Because there's it'll only do it if you go to here or you go there. It's still advertising. And right now, even with YouTube and everything else, the way they're constantly shoving advertisement down your throat, whether you want it or not.
I
understand they got to make some money, but it's just like, enough is enough.
I watch enough YouTube that it was worth it to buy the premium subscription. So I don't get the pre-roll ads. I don't get the ads that they shove in the middle of it. I still get the sponsor reads that the people do themselves, but it sure does keep things flowing while I'm trying to be informed and be entertained with those things.
I did just read that YouTube is going to start inserting unskippable ads.
Okay. Even for premium?
I'm trying to see if it says that. Yeah.
I will say the Kindle that I bought, when you put it to sleep or when it goes to sleep, it does pull up an ad and leave it on the screen, right?
Yep.
But it doesn't put that in while I'm in the middle of reading the book.
Oh, okay.
My Fire TV does that. When I pause a show, it shows me an ad before it goes into my slideshow.
Okay.
YouTube is also going to do start showing ads when you pause your video.
But the coolest thing I've done lately, and we broadcast out of Rochester, New York, in the United States, and if you are also a New York resident, you can get a library card to the New York City Public Library. And when you do that, you can access their collection of e-books. So, without making the multiple-hour drive down to Manhattan, you can visit the public library of New York City, and you can take out e-books for a period of time. I think it's usually a couple weeks. And their collection of e-books is gigantic compared to our local libraries here. And then you can get them pushed directly to your Kindle and read them for a couple weeks. And then you don't even have to drive them back to the library. They just say, okay,
to return.
Yep.
And it's amusing technologically, but there are license restrictions on ebooks that the library only has two copies of this ebook, and that's all they can loan out at once, even though there's no physical limitation on ebooks.
Yeah, but you can put yourself on a hold list, and they'll say, okay, yes, it's going to be available in a couple of days. Let it click here if you want us to push it to your Kindle. And they'll do it. And it's the greatest thing, man, to get free content from your library that's hundreds of miles away.
I use the Libby app on my iPad.
Yes, right. Same idea. And it's great. Of course, the local Monroe County Library will happily do very similar things.
And you can have multiple library cards in
Libby.
In Libby, yeah.
Yes.
In fact, I was looking for a book, like the third one in the series, because it's not available in Rochester. But I found it in San Diego.
Okay.
But they wouldn't let me get a library card because I don't live in San Diego.
You don't have a mailing address?
Yeah.
So you have to call up your local mailboxes, et cetera, and say, hey, guys, I need a P.O. box.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was really excited when I learned about that. I said it was during the lockdown. And yeah. I said, well, this is good, but it doesn't have what I want. And then I learned more about the New York City Library, and they said, oh, yeah, we've got a whole bunch of, we can search our card catalog. And I looked and was like, wow, all these things are here? And I scrolled and scrolled and scrolled, and I said, this is fantastic. How do I get this? And they said, oh, you just go over to this link, okay, and then you fill out this form, okay. And then they said, okay, here's your virtual library card, and you put that in, and you reserve the things, and they shoot them right to you. I didn't even have to leave the house.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Make life simpler.
Simpler. It didn't cost me a dime other than my, Kindle and my internet service.
I remember reading that some of the libraries put together a banned book list.
Okay.
So when there's big news about some school banning a book, you can go to the library and get it.
Yeah.
And in fact, they usually say,
here,
any book that's been banned, you should probably read it and find out why they wanted you not to know that stuff.
Yeah. What is it they have such a problem with?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, even though, say, like Florida, the books that they're banning down there, what's to stop you from like going up to the New York City libraries like you just did?
Right. Yeah.
And getting the book there.
Because most people won't do that.
Yeah, it's grandstanding. It's trying to put a message in front of people that they will agree with while you're talking to a certain group of people.
I read, I forget what city it was, but Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury got banned. The premise of the book is on book banning. It was so funny. In fact, we got mad when my son was in 9th or 10th grade. I forget what year he was in. They had to read that book as part of English class.
Right.
Well, both Shirley and I have like 3 or 4 different copies each. None of them were the right version. So we had to buy the one that the school was using so the page numbers worked. Oh. Read pages 5 to 23 tonight.
Sure.
And what was interesting is that back in the 70s, there was an edition that had been severely edited to take out objectionable material.
Oh.
About book burning in a book. About
really?
Book burning. Yeah. So if you had the wrong version, you might not even get the whole story anymore.
Right.
Huh. That was one thing Gene Roddenberry always said with Star Trek, is that if you call it science fiction, you can write about anything.
No doubt.
So there are episodes on drug addiction and race relations and war. Lazarus. Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. We talked with Frank Gorshin. But it's science fiction, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah. They were trying to, let's see, what was the episode where they had it was a planet that was at war and the two sides didn't have actual combat?
Yeah.
But if your number was called up.
The ultimate computer?
It was your turn to.
Yeah, if the computer decided the bomb killed you, you had to go to the destruction chamber and blow yourself up.
And everybody just kind of shrugged and went along with it.
Yeah.
Because it was better than. Bloody battles.
Right.
Sort of population control.
It was weird. Oh, I just saw Logan's Run for the first time.
Oh, really?
I've never seen that one.
Now, you got to read the book. The book is slightly different.
You're
21 in the book. You die at 21 in the book because, there's 7 years as a child, 7 years as a teen, and then 7 years as an adult. In the movie, it's 30.
Right.
Because they couldn't find actors younger than that. But it's interesting, yeah. So everyone has a certain amount of life, and then maybe you get renewed on your 30th birthday when your hand thing starts blinking at you.
Right. So it was considering that Star Wars came out the following year. I was just looking at like the production values of the two.
Yeah.
Because the Logan's Run as a film was trying really hard, but they didn't have any of the CGI. It all had to be practical effects and. Things that they could do in camera or near camera, and it was pretty rough. But then when I recognized that 12 months later, Star Wars is out, and you think about the types of effects that they used in that, it's not even close. It's almost laughable. But other than that, it was a good story. So I'm hoping maybe the book can fill in some of the gaps, because it seems like the book always has a few more things than the film
books
did.
But
it was English, so they didn't have.
Yes,
as much of the Hollywood to it, and Lucas invented most of that stuff for Star Wars himself anyway.
Sure,
and John Dykstra and a lot. There's a really interesting documentary on Disney Plus on the beginnings of the ranch and Lucas, not Lucas
Skywalker
Film,
Ranch.
Skywalker Ranch, yeah, and interviews with a lot of the original people that are still around on stuff they were just making up along the way. And the whole motion capture and motion controlled cameras, where you could have the camera follow the same path every time, so you could put different things in front of it and mat everything together. You know, just the amazing things they were just thinking of out of the top of their head.
I was watching, it was on TikTok, they were watching the sound designer come up with just the sound of the Millennium Falcon with the hyperdrive breaking down. And it was like, oh, well, we took these different eight things and he played them all back to back to back to back. And then we put them all together like this. So it's like one is a what did they call that? Inertial starter for a airplane, you know, where you get the starter going and going and going, and then you dump all of that energy into the airplane engine to get it started. And they talked about the other sounds of other things breaking down, and then they matted all together, and then that's what they ended up with every time that they're punching different parts of the ship on the inside to percussive maintenance to try and get it to jump to hyperspace.
Yep.
It was incredible. So much of that is just people being creative and thinking about, all right, well, what could this be? You know, and I think about myself as a kid watching Star Trek The Next Generation as a kid and thinking about turbo lifts and Jeffrey's tubes and shuttlecrafts and the holodeck, of course, which was a fantastic device for all the writers to invent, to have their cast go into just about any environment and still be on their main mission while the ship is plodding along. Fantastic creative ideas.
I'm searching for Skywalker Ranch, and it suggests Skinwalker Ranch. That's completely different.
Different ranch.
Different, yeah.
Not the same.
Although it just came out that Travis, their science guy, who's got like 16 PhDs, is still working for the government, and he's big into government conspiracies.
Oh,
and
the guy from Logan's Run, the main character, the
Michael
the,
York.
Yeah, it turns out he was the guy who was in Michael Myers doing the fake British 007.
Yeah, Austin Powers.
Austin Powers.
Yeah.
He was like the Q, I think, of that of that one. It was nice to see that he was still being pulled in and getting work there.
And Jenny Agutter in that slinky little dress she got to wear the whole movie.
Yeah.
She was in a couple of spy TV series, MI6, that I would watch.
That's great. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next.
Then you got to find the American TV show they did of it.
Okay.
There's a spin-off TV show.
All right, that's news to me. I'll have to take a look for that.
Yes. The 70s and early 80s were an amazing time to be a kid.
I bet.
See, that's where I have to laugh, because I grew up in the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay.
And TV was totally different.
Yeah. No, I was watching something about the Dick Van Dyke Show in the 61 through 65, and the episode where Laura Petrie goes to the hospital and they have little Richie as a new baby. Yeah. And they had constantly been getting food and flowers delivered to a different room because it was like the PDs were in one room and the Petries were in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
And they got home and they Rob Petrie is thinking that maybe there was a baby switch, and he's getting nervous, and they find the other family and they describe it, and the guy says, well, no, I don't really think that's what happened. He says, please, would you just come over so I can talk?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, I'll come over. And this was in the 60s, and there was a lot of social change going on, especially around race relations. And they open the door, and it's a man and woman from the middle class, but they happen to be black. Mm. They walk in, and there was just a gigantic laugh break after that.
Yep.
Well, folks, this concludes another segment of Sound Bites. I'd like to thank Dennis for popping in here and filling in. And for you folks going through no phones and just hearing us talk, and at least coming in there, a few of you folks asking questions, we really appreciate it. But we will, Nick, Steve, and I will be back again next week to take more of your questions. So please see you in, what is it? He says 166 hours. with another version of Soundbites. So stay tuned next week, and we will see you here at Jazz 90.1.